Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's crazy out there. It's getting crazier by the day. You got Rudy Giuliani. He's for Yankee fan. He's for the Red Sox. You got Murdoch took over all the news business. He's showing Dancing with the Stars. Flip the channel. There's the Iranian Hitler brandishing his rockets that can fire as far as 1,200 miles. Flip the channel. There's Tom McCain saying he's a real conservative, even though he tried to pass the McCain-Kennedy amnesty bill, which we're supposed to forget about. Flip the channel. There's a harlot slipped on a banana peel and showed us a crotch, and we're supposed to believe that she's cooler than a nun. Flip the channel, and there's another moron talking about something he knows nothing about, but he just won a Nobel Prize. Flip the channel, and there's Queen Elizabeth giving a news prize to Mata Hari on CNN. Flip the channel, and there it is, America pastiche. Michael Savage, hello, how are you? It's getting crazier by the day, isn't it? Now, I got to tell you, a day in the life of a talk show host is ordinarily rather boring. So once in a while, I have to make sure it isn't boring. So here's what I did. It's like, why do I do this to myself? As I told you, I have several studios around the San Francisco Bay Area, and I shift around according to whim. So today was a beautiful day, one of those gorgeous late October days in the San Francisco area that you can't describe. You have to be here. No fires. The southern hemisphere is burning, unfortunately, and it's a nightmare. I mean, it is almost biblical. 500,000 people displaced from their houses. And up here, it's like nothing, nothing, no smoke, no nothing. Perfect October weather like we've always had. The kind of weather you get out on your boat and you go out to sea in, because the seas are calm all the way out, and they will be for a few more weeks. And then come the winter winds. So I go into the city. I want to see people. I want to have lunch in my favorite greasy spoon Chinese restaurant so I can complain about the indigestion. So I have a studio in an apartment building that's a nightmare, a mess, run by the most, well, just say run by morons. And they've been working on refurbishing the building for well over a year now, wrecking everybody's life with jackhammers and smoke and noise, and nobody can do anything about it because there's no power for a tenant in San Francisco unless you're a homeless bum with a needle sticking out of your arm. If you got a spike hanging out of your arm, you got the whole city behind you. If you're a normal tenant, you have no power whatsoever in this sicko city. So I figured they were through with the scaffolds outside my balcony. And I get there in the morning, and sure enough, there was no scaffold outside my balcony. It was like on the first floor. I said, all right, I picked a good day. I stroll around town. I look at this. I look at that. I go have lunch in my favorite greasy Chinese greasy spoon. I ate the whole plate of chicken curry, got nauseous from it, left, went out in the street like a dazed bumblebee had been sprayed with Raid, the way I wanted to feel, because I don't want to pay attention to the news. I amble over to an antique store, poke my head in, once in a while I enjoy it, and I found an RCA Victor composition advertising dog nipper, circa 1950, height 36 inches, and I said, what a great idea. I think I'm going to buy the RCA Victor dog. It's like a ceramic statue. They want $1,295. Now, I grew up in the antique business. I figure it's worth $5. If an upscale antique store is asking $1,295, it must be worth between $5 and $10, I figure. Since I grew up in the antique business, I figured I'd go back and look it up on Google. Then I found another thing I wanted, an English or American mahogany decanter chest. Remember those chests? When I was a little kid, my father's store, these would come through. I love them. They're like a decanter chest with bottles called decanters that you put whiskeys in and various beautiful glasses circa 1810, and the price is $32.50. I figured I'd buy it. It's probably worth $250 on eBay. So I come home and I look up these items. Well, I didn't actually get I didn't finish the story yet. I put them in my bag, head back up to the apartment with about an hour to go before the show, And lo and behold, nightmare, the scaffold's outside my deck again with jackhammers going and smoke. I have to race up to the apartment, get my bag with stories, race down, jump in my car, which I call Kaiser Wilhelm. I gave it a name. And I have to race out of San Francisco, getting behind every tourist schmuck ever invented, six to a car, gaping, looking over the bridge, down and around, blah, 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 I'm home, 30 minutes, here I am, boom. So I look it up on the internet, and it's $99 for the dog. It's a little smaller, but it's $99, not $12.95. And the American or English mahogany decanter circa 1810 I can't find. And here I am, and that's the end of the story. And my heart is racing, and there's still too many hours in the day. That's the funny part. There are too many hours in the day. Do you understand that? Do you realize what you could do in 5 minutes in this world if you're depressed? You could walk around the block. You can write an email. You can write three emails. You can call a relative you think you hate. You can, I mean, there's 100 things you could do in 5 minutes instead of sitting there staring at the wall. Welcome to the Savage Nation. If you think I'm going to talk about Clip 12. You're absolutely right. Play clip 12.
With this medal, we acknowledge a debt that will not diminish with time and can never be repaid.
How sincere my president can sound. How sincere he can sound giving a medal of honor to a dead Navy SEAL while letting an American hero rot in prison, throwing him in front of a court-martial, throwing him under the bus of political correctness. And that is Lieutenant Colonel Chassani. And I don't want to talk about it again, but I got to tell you something. I got an email this morning from the Thomas More Law Center. They said, in addition to my $10,000 donation, you the listeners, sent $20,000 overnight, and they said they're going to get a lot. They said it's a record. They never had that much in one night. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you again for taking care of this. It's for the lieutenant, not for me. It went to them, not to me. I want to make that clear. And he said much more will probably be coming through the snail mail region. So, guys, keep it up. This man needs your help. He doesn't need George Bush giving out medals of honor to dead Navy SEALs to pretend he's the commander-in-chief. I mean, it's a frightening thing. The whole thing is crazy. It's crazy by the day. No wonder I'm going back to antique stores. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Here's a headline. Reid reviving amnesty for illegals. Dream grant of legality to millions on fast track for a vote today. He's trying to sneak it through again, Harry. Here's another one. What's her name? Nancy Pelosi. Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you. So I was in the antique store. So the woman in the antique store said, are you going to the fall antique show? I said, no. Well, let me give you the brochure. So I look at it when I get home, and it says October 24th, Wednesday, 7 p.m., preview party, benefit gala, honorary chair, speaker Nancy Pelosi and Mr. Paul Pelosi. I said, this I got to go to. I've got to go to the antique show tomorrow night. The gala, the preview party, and see all of the phonies. And I got to see the Speaker of the House and tell her how much I admire her for having opened up a new front in the Iraq war just when things were calming down and for turning Turkey against the Kurds. I want to congratulate her on the biggest political blunder of the century. But then I figured, why bother? Why bother? I don't go out of my way to insult people, so I'm not even going to go to that opening. But at least I could. I could think about going there, you know? I could think about it. What do you want to talk? What are the people calling about? I'm not even in the mood to talk today. I'd like you to do the show. The stories are so horrible. It's getting me depressed. Look at this one. Parents drown in Portugal water rescue. It's enough to make you throw yourself off a bridge. You hear this story? Three children go swimming off the coast of southern Portugal. They get caught in a riptide. Their parents run in the water to save the children, and they die. Then an English tourist runs in the water to save the children, and she dies. The children survive. The parents are dead. I don't know how the children survived. Well, what would you do if your child was in a riptide? You wouldn't even think about it, would you? See, you're in a no-win situation. If you've got children, if you don't have children, you don't know what I'm talking about. You have no idea of reality unless you have children. You have children, and you're out there on the beach, and you see them being pulled out by a current, and they cry out for help. You throw yourself in the water. Because if you don't, and they die, you may as well shoot yourself on the beach. Because there's not a chance you're going to live without insanity the rest of your life. So you're better off dying in the water than letting it. But they go in, and a number of adults on the beach, including the children's parents, rushed into the sea to help. The parents of the British children and the father of the German girl were trapped by the current strong waves and drowned, as did another British woman. Oh, God. Recent hot weather has drawn many people to Portugal's beaches. You see, it was global warming that did it. If Al Gore, the genius, had only been listened to, these poor English could have stayed home. They wouldn't have gone to the beach. The children wouldn't have almost drowned, and the parents wouldn't be dead. If only we had listened to the genius, the huckster, excuse me, Al Gore, whatever he may be, the scaremonger, huckster Al Gore. Kurdish website displays photos of captured Turkish soldiers. This one is for Nancy Pelosi and the great humanitarian Tom Lantos. Because of Tom Lantos's humanitarianism, the Kurds conducted a hit-and-run mission on the Turks and captured these Turkish soldiers. Thank you, Tom. You did a fine job. Keep on swimming. We will terminate. We will terminate. Keep on swimming, Tom. We will terminate. We will terminate this. WOR in New York. David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael Savage. I'm going to try to get this out as best I could. I'm a little bit nervous. Last week, I put my dinner on the table, as I usually do, around 6
o'clock. Okay, listen, friend, you got a bad connection, so make it short.
Okay, and I flipped on the radio, and the music comes on, the Rolling Thunder, and what I didn't know was there was a little kid in front of the building walking his dog, and the dog isn't all that big, and the dog was walking away. But while I started eating, I was laughing, saying, I thought that you would superimpose Teddy's voice onto the music, and it sounded so apropos, like Teddy barking.
All right, that's very nice. And this show is coming to you on your filling, incidentally. You're receiving it on your mercury dental filling that is not really coming out of your radio. I am actually inside your tooth with Teddy right now, and it is being transmitted to you inside your oral cavity. I don't think I should watch late-night television, particularly shows about where they dig up bones from the Mount Vesuvius. I mean, dead Italians I got to look at? That they got wiped out in 1/24th of a second? He or she is clutching an infant. We can tell by mutilating, desecrating her bones through new techniques that she was a slave girl because her bones were thicker than the Romans, than the Italians found in the tomb. She was clutching probably the baby of the owner if it was her own. Over here we have the lovers in their arms. They did not know what hit them. They were hit by the dust, the hot dust of the volcano in 1/24th of a second. Their flesh was seared off their body. All of their organs destroyed, but today we can desecrate the grave and dust off the bones and then try to sleep tonight. Go ahead and look at yourself, and here comes Halloween, and there it is. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, I think I'm just going to do a potpourri show today. There's nothing to talk about. I gave you the whole overview already. Who could focus on this every day without getting mentally deranged? And how can you focus on this every day and pretend that you can do anything about it? It's like a world spinning out of control and there's no way to stop it. It seems like it has to crash in order to recover its sanity, because I've never seen anything like it. Never. I never saw anything like it. It doesn't make sense to me anymore. You got our worst enemy in history since Hitler, who tells us he's going to get a nuclear bomb, wipe out Israel. Israel does nothing. Then after he's through with that, he's going to wipe out the great Satan. We do nothing. Then he comes to New York and he basically defecates on our nation and our president, and he walks out of here untouched. Now, I mean, what am I supposed to do as a normal guy? I'm no government. What's it for? What's it for? So a kid could go in the Marines thinking he's going to save the country, and if God forbid he shoots them first, he gets a court-martial? And then Bush gives a medal to a dead Navy SEAL? Sure, a dead SEAL is a good SEAL, I guess. That's the next best step to a court-martial. There you go. Chicago, Illinois. Sean, what's on your mind? Are you there, Sean? 1, 2, 3. Bye. Next case. Fort Lauderdale, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yes, the issue between the Turks and Kurds has nothing whatsoever to do with the genocide. The Turks are going to do what they want to do.
Yeah, but wait, sir, we know that there has been enmity for a long period of time, but I guess you haven't followed the news recently?
So I followed everything.
You have. So what do you think triggered this latest move by Turkey to massing troops and equipment along the border? Did it come out of a vacuum, or did it come because of some event?
It's going to happen anyway. It has.
So Nancy Pelosi provoking the Turks had nothing to do with it because she's a Democrat. She can do no evil. Only a Republican can do evil.
I'll bet you
believe that Bush invaded Iraq for no reason, right?
No, I don't.
You mean Republicans can make mistakes also?
What?
You heard me. Don't give me the deaf ear all of a sudden. Give me the good ear. Turn the good ear toward the radio.
Let me tell you what we should do with the Turks. We should threaten to expel them.
I'll tell you what we should do with the Turks. Cook them for Thanksgiving. That's what we're going to do. You know what? You're on the side of the Kurds now? Iran's puppet Kurds?
We should throw the Turks to the Russian bear.
Why? There are sir, 70% of our equipment going to Iraq transits through Turkey. You're aware of that, aren't you?
If we threaten to...
No, sir. Don't go over what I just said. Turkey is one of our strongest allies in the Middle East. Why would you want to shaft an ally?
That we couldn't invade northern Iraq from Turkey. They wouldn't let us. Right?
You didn't hear me, though. Do 70% of the supplies to our men go through Turkey, yes or no?
We could.
No, if you won't answer a question, you go back to the pinochle table. Don't waste my time. You won't answer a question because you think that you're playing pinochle with one of your buddies there who's deaf. The fact of the matter is, 70% of all the supplies going to our men goes through Turkey. We can't afford to alienate our ally. But Nancy Pelosi did alienate our ally after they said, don't pass the resolution. Don't provoke us right now. All right, go play pinochle. Leave me alone. I don't want these callers. You know, don't take anyone over 50. Do me a favor for a while. Something happens today to the gray matter. I don't know what it is. I just got the data came out on the satellite radio. It's all a con. It just came out. Only over a million listeners came to hear Howard Stern on Sirius, not the 5 to 7 million he and others have been claiming on that network, according to something I just got. But the lazy media won't report it.
Savage.
Like turning the clock backwards. That's why I want to buy the 1950 dog, the RCA Victor composition advertising dog Nipper. I'm thinking of getting all 1950s items for a room, get 1950s clothing, like a bomb shelter that isn't a bomb shelter, just call it like a time shelter, and go in it once a day. You know, like the advertising dog, Jack Benny, Bob Hope pictures. I just, another time, another world. It's crazy. The whole thing's nuts. Now you got the fires in on the coast, Malibu. One of the reasons this fire is out of control is because the residents of Malibu have refused to allow controlled burns, which would have gotten rid of flammable undergrowth that under normal natural circumstances are destroyed every year by small fires. But the reason the residents do not want controlled burns is because they're unsightly. They smell. They can leave ash in residents' swimming pools. And so, therefore, because of vanity, they stopped the natural cycle. They wouldn't permit controlled burns. And so now we have nature giving us an uncontrolled burn. You understand that? The brush built up like tinder. So this is environmentalism gone crazy. And also greed and vanity, etc. But nature always wins in the end. It's always going to win in the end, and this happens every year through all history that we know of. Always goes on at this time of year. It's the end of a long, hot cycle. The end is called the summer, boys and girls. Summer is when it's very hot, and it generally occurs between June and late September, or depending upon where you are in the country. And then it's followed by autumn, which usually begins around October in most parts of the East, and runs until a season that was known as winter, which is generally accompanied by bitter cold and snow. And that season, boys and girls, is usually followed by springtime. And it's called the Four Seasons. Now, we realize the Four Seasons can't be taught anymore because it's weatherist. And you cannot teach weatherist views of the climate cycles that have been around since God created the earth. What we have to do is brainwash the entire country into believing that there's no such thing as a season. There's only a news cycle. And in every news cycle, you need some horror story, such as global warming. So there it is. Malibu. It's a good thing I didn't buy anything in Malibu. Just I was thinking about it, but I'm glad I didn't at the end of the day. I'm sorry for them. I mean, even Mel Gibson's bar where he drank before the tirade, I think, went up in smoke. It's a shame. He can't tie one on anymore in that bar. You know. WTNT, Rafat, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. First, I just want to say thank you for standing up for what's right. At least one person out there is doing that. The second thing I want to talk about is, I mean, yeah, we talk about illegal aliens and all that, but we tend to forget the garbage that comes in here legally. Like, I just moved to D.C., and all these Muslim fundamentalists, I mean, they walk around Northern Virginia as if they own the place.
All right. Well, they do own the place. They spit on Americans. They look at you with hatred if you're not wearing 14th to 15th century garb, and they spit on the ground. Now, the question is why Bush is bringing in so many of them. Isn't that the question?
Absolutely.
You'll have to ask the genius himself. Why would a nation that is as evolved as America and as liberal as America is socially want to bring in throwbacks who are living in the 15th century? Now, you have to ask yourself, what's the benefit? What is the societal benefit of bringing in throwbacks, some of whom are no doubt terrorists and some of whom are going to produce children who will become terrorists? Why would you want to bring them into the country? Isn't that common sense? A commonsensical question? Well, go ask George Bush. He may have an answer for it.
I
don't have an answer. Don't you understand? I'm going to give you the shrug now. The shoulders go up. I go, what do I know? How do I have an answer for George Bush's genius? I know that many Republicans think he has a plan for everything. And in the end, he's going to show the genius that he really is. Thanks. We need more Muslims. I think we should have more throwbacks brought in with burqas and things of that nature, who refuse to adapt to America or do as Americans do. We need more of them in every community. As many as we can get, particularly young, disenfranchised males. That's what we really need right now. What do you want to talk about? Salt Lake City, Jay, question or comment, go ahead.
Michael, I hope you can shed some light on this because it's irritating me that nobody else is even speaking of it. What does Vladimir Putin have to gain in the short run and the long run for cozying up to Iran the way he is right now? And I think I know what the answer is, but
I'm going to throw it at me. I'm probably the sharpest analyst of international affairs in the history of the media. And I say that because I've always been right. First of all, Putin is the former head of the KGB. We acknowledge that. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So therefore, he's one of the brightest men on the international stage, one of the cagiest. And he's been around probably longer than most leaders. And he's been involved in very high stakes poker games and very high stakes chess games on multiple boards. In other words, he could play chess on four boards at once. Is that correct? Would you agree with that assessment to start with?
Agree with that assessment exactly.
All right, so I'm trying to lead people step by step. So Putin is probably one of the most brilliant chess players on the international scale, table. And he is actually not cozying up to Iran. He's snookering Iran. He's trying to trick, well, it's already the cat's out of the bag. He was trying to trick Hitler, Ahmadinejad, into believing he wanted an alliance with him by saying he would take on the development of various aspects of the nuclear structures for him if he would turn it over to him. Well, Ahmadinejad said drop dead to Russia just last week. Don't you remember?
Yes.
All right. So in other words, Ahmadinejad understood that Russia was not really their ally. Russia was acting as a factotum of the international players who don't want Iran to get a nuclear weapon. And Iran being the Iranian Hitler being who he is, he said drop dead to Putin. He's on a full-scale, 1,000-mile-an-hour plan to build nuclear weapons as fast as possible. Now, that's my analysis. In other words, there is no relationship between Putin and Iran. It was an attempt to get Iran under control. That's how I see it. Do you agree or disagree?
I absolutely agree. And we have on the headlines of every single one of the major outlets is talking about this as if it is some kind of alliance that the United States needs to be ultimately concerned with. Because
No. They don't understand anything. The people in the media don't understand anything. They're not even D students, most people in journalism. How can they understand something as complex as this? I mean, they're still reporting things that we know to be false. They still report global warming is approved, agreed upon by all scientists. That's rubbish. So what can they possibly know about the mind of Vladimir Putin? It would take a talk show host like me, a certifiable genius, with a real PhD and two real master's degrees to even begin to comprehend any of the international moves on the chessboard. You can't rely upon them. That's why they're only writing for newspapers making $42,000 a year. Thanks for the call. And why they hate me. I'm sorry. Once in a while, you got to hear it like it is. You want me to run myself into the ground for your amusement? I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. If the State Department had any brains, they would actually consult with me. Or if the CIA really wanted to know what I thought, I'd be glad to help them, to be honest with you, because I'm sure some of them could have figured that out at this point. I'm sure they know it already. Remember a few years ago when the pot-bellied pig from North Korea was threatening us with the Longdong missile, that he was firing missiles and threatening everyone? The porno lover, the fat guy who likes brandy, blondes, and porno, the guy who runs North Korea, not your neighbor. I said, wait a minute. Now, he's merely a pimple on an elephant's behind. The elephant's China. They have to control him, not us. And I must have said for 3 months, we have to pressure China to rein him in. Now, of course, he was a puppet of China. Kim Il-sung III was doing this only because China wanted him to do it, because we were threatening China with trade sanctions at the time. We were threatening China that they have to reevaluate the yuan. They're out trading us, right? So they figured, all right, now let's rattle the cage a little bit. Let's get our little puppet to start firing some missiles into the sea and threaten the West. So he did that for a while. And we stopped threatening China with trade sanctions. Nothing's happened. We stopped threatening China to reevaluate their currency. Nothing's happened. As a matter of fact, what's happened is China's come out 10 times stronger than they were before it, because we caved on that one as well. You want to hear that little truth? I cannot give you one victory of the Bush administration. Mohammed in Houston, Texas. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, how come we haven't had the bilateral talks with Iran and Syria? You're always talking about war. Why don't you ever talk about having peace, sir?
Well, you just did. You're the international genius. What would talks with Hitler have done in 1939?
I'm not an international genius. It sounds like you are.
Well, I am an international genius, so I'll tell you a little history since you're an ignoramus. What happened in 1939 when Chamberlain, the English minister, prime minister, went to Germany to talk with President Hitler? Tell me what happened. Do you know?
No, I don't.
What's the matter, Mohammed? You missed that part of your education?
No.
While you were learning how to make a shoe bomb, you missed this?
You know? It's all what? You know the history of
Get off my show, you ignorant throwback. Don't even call this show. Go call Al Jazeera. Don't waste my time. I never want that creep on my show again. Let them all go to hell, all of them. I can't stand them anymore, all of them. Don't sit here and lecture me in my own country, you creep, you throwback, you shoe bomber. The only thing we'd get out of talking with Iran is a kick in the teeth or a kick in the groin. There's only one thing that bum will understand, and that's a cruise missile down his throat with all of his mullahs sent to Allah immediately. Thank God I have no power. Thank God I am threatening the West. I'd launch a cruise missile right down his dirty little yap, and he and his elevator shoes would go flying right to Allah land, along with the throwbacks, the mullahs. And let me tell you, the Iranian people would dance in the streets. And we would save the world millions of deaths, millions of deaths. Just think if we could have killed Hitler in 1939, 60 to 90 million people wouldn't have died as a result. You can't talk to people like that. It's impossible to talk to them. They're brainwashed. They're insane. They're insane. They live in another universe. You can't talk with them. There's only one thing they understand, and that's power. and they need to be crushed by American military power while we still have the power. Otherwise, the minute he gets the power, it's all over. We'll be blackmailed. So I don't have an answer for you. We have no leadership. They're all quaking in their boots. You understand that? 1-800-449-8255. And I thought there was nothing to talk about today. You're here and you won't let me get away with just sitting here. I wanted to talk about an English or American mahogany decanter chest containing six large and six small gilded decanters, circa 1810. A guy wants $3,250. And the RCA Victor composition advertising dog Nipper, circa 1950. The store wants $1,295. I'm trying to find it if I can buy it for less somewhere. O-R, W-O-R, New York City. Christine, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, my dear. I have just this recipe for you. Special coffee. Hello?
What do I need it for? I just had a cup of coffee.
Oh, you've never had this coffee. This is a special brew that has been in my family, a Greek family, for centuries.
What do you mean a brew?
It's
coffee with something in it?
No. It's all the coffee you've been complaining about is burned. It's overcooked.
No. I got better coffee. I got Italian coffee. It turned out that the coffee I got was garbage. I got some Italian beans now that are just the greatest. In the machine, it's all better now. I'm good. The Greeks drink how many cups a day do you drink?
Listen to me.
No, I mean, how many cups do you drink a day?
Oh, I just drink one.
So that's all? So what do I need anymore? One a day. I'll take it. Okay. I once was in the streets of North Beach, the once Italian district of San Francisco. Now it's the home to bums and mainland China, with a remnant of a Little Italy left to it, you know, somewhere. It's like sort of like the Little Italy amusement park, North Beach. But 30 years ago, when I first came to San Francisco, there used to be women dressed in black, old, like lean Italian women. They used to gossip with each other on the street, whispering. I loved it. And being the kind of guy I am, I would once in a while go up and talk to them, because wherever I've been in the world, I've had the capacity to go up to strangers. And they, you know, I always get into good conversations for some reason. I don't know how the conversation arose. I was talking to one of the old women. She must have been a good 95, gaunt, probably Sicilian. And I said to her, "Mama, what do you do for health?" I said to her, you know, like she says to me, there's hardly anything that's wrong with a person that a little coffee, a little wine, and a little garlic can't cure. I agree with her 100%. I agree with 100%. Of course, I add a few things to that mixture. Like it's not a little wine, it's more than a little wine. It's not a little garlic, it's a lot more than a little garlic. And there are other things I like to do. But for her at work, they were beautiful old women. They're gone. You don't see them anymore. Now their granddaughters are walking the streets. They look like Britney Spears with... like they just came out of a nightclub where there were gangs all here. Hail, hail, the gang's all here. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So there's New York State, Elliot Spitzer spitting on the law, turning the entire Democrat Party on itself, as it should be, finally realizing what they are, which is a fundamentally racket, a racket that got caught in its own vice. And I mean that in both ways, you know, vice, V-I-C-E and V-I-S-E. This Spitzer is really something. This guy is a total maniac. Illegal aliens given driver's licenses, violates state law. The guy was a former attorney general. How does he think he's going to get away with this? Now a county clerk is suing to stop the license plan. They ought to put him in jail. They ought to put him in a pair of an orange jumpsuit. You know, we're sick of these maniacs where absolute power corrupts absolutely. Look at his eyes. The guy looks crazy. WOR, New York. Mark, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, slightly different twist on your analysis of the Putin-Ahmadinejad situation. I think it's obvious that Putin is smart enough to realize that Ahmadinejad is dangerous with a nuclear weapon on his doorstep. But I don't think he's doing, they're not getting together to do America or the West any favors. I think Putin wants to use Ahmadinejad as a dog to bother the United States, because I think he has ambitions to make the Soviet Union, Russia, obviously the same thing to Putin. more powerful. And
that's right. He wants to rebuild the ex-Soviet Union, and he certainly doesn't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon in the belly of the beast, so to speak. That's true. I mean, that's a given, but it's still, I think, is reasonable to assume that he was trying to snooker Ahmadinejad, but Ahmadinejad didn't take the bait. I mean, we agree on that for whatever the reasons.
Yeah, I agree that Ahmadinejad's definitely the most dangerous man since Hitler, and the trouble is that he's not rational. I think that he is believing in all this 12.
Yeah, the 12 Mahdi. I don't even want to hear any more about their folklore. I'm sick of their folkloric beliefs. He may as well have a bone through his nose, as far as I'm concerned. I have no respect for him. What, because he calls himself a Muslim? I'd like to spit right through the microphone at his brand of Islam. He may as well have a bone through his nose and be holding a spear, as far as I'm concerned. What do you mean, the 12th Mahdi? The world has to go up in smoke for that maniac psychotic?
You know,
if you got a crazy mad dog running in the streets of a town, you call a dog catcher and they put him down. This guy is a mad dog running through the streets of the world, threatening to bite everybody. It's time to put him down. Thanks for the call. I wish Israel was Israel. I wish they had Golda Meir. I wish they'd launched some of their weaponry already. What do they want us to do? Take care of them too? Let them do something with all the weapons we gave them. That's what America really is sick of Israel, by the way. That's why Americans, even the most diehard supporters of Israel, are starting to say, many of them, what do we need to give them money for? They're never fighting any war. And we keep hearing, well, they can't because they wouldn't get the Arab world mad. Screw the Arab world. They're our enemy. What do you mean, get the Arab world mad? They've been mad from the time they were invented. What do you mean, they're going to get mad? They hate everybody on the planet. They want to crush everybody and take over the world. Don't tell me that they're going to get mad. WOR New York, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, it's a pleasure talking to you. I'd just like to say, you were talking about the antiques before. And I find myself going crazy, and I get happy looking at old things, like going back.
That is right. Every time I see a piece from hundreds of years ago, I say, this thing has survived fires, earthquakes, wars, revolutions, invasions, and been preserved. Look at the value of this item. It's civilization. It's Western civilization. That's why I love antiques.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And life goes on. It goes on. The madness continues. Where it ends, nobody knows except God himself. This is the Savage Nation. If you want to talk about any of the topics that I've initiated today, or if you want to bring up a new topic, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. You're always welcome to visit me at my website, michaelsavage.com. And, I don't understand this. It says that the Michelin Guide has just come out with the new ratings. You know, I'm a foodie, but I don't like fancy food. I don't like fancy restaurants. I don't have the patience to sit through long meals. And I, for life me, don't understand it. I don't comprehend people who, A, have nothing to do in their life but sit for 3 hours and eat. I don't get it. Don't have anything else to do with their lives? I'm not saying eat like an animal at a trough. I mean, there's a big, big difference between the two. What do I care if some fat French guy went into a restaurant and gave it 1 star, 2 stars, or 3 stars. So every schmuck now wants to go to the restaurant that has the third star. Oh, the French kitchen, French laundry. Oh, they go up there and they come back. Oh, I ate at the French. I waited months. I got in and, you have no idea what that meal was like. What was it like? Oh, you can't believe the 3 star. Oh, what I had there. What'd you have there that was different than a two-star restaurant or a one-star restaurant? Tell me. You can't tell me. See, I once knew a wine expert, and I had him on the show 14 years ago before I was a national host. And I said to him, Tommy, what's the difference between a $20 bottle of wine and a $50 bottle of wine? He said $30. Well, his boss almost killed him because he never wanted him to come on the show again. I mean, a lot of it is just fantasy. According to the NARE, 5 criteria are used for awarding stars. Hey, listen to this. Product quality. What does that mean, product quality in a restaurant? Preparation and flavors. All right. The cuisine's personality. Duh. What do you mean? The green beans talk to you? The cuisine's personality? What are you talking about? Value, okay, and consistency, whatever that means. It's whatever the rating guy wants it to mean. So in the Michelin Guide, 1 star represents a very good restaurant. 2 stars mean excellent cooking worth a detour. And 3 stars are defined as exceptional cuisine worth a special journey mainly for schmucks from New York who come to San Francisco and have to go all the way to Napa to eat an exceptional meal so they can boast about it when they get home, in my opinion. I would never go there. Well, I don't even like eating in a place called Laundry. To me, it's like an oxymoron. Why would you want to eat a place with that laundry in its name? It's like, would you eat in a place called the Italian Plumbing Kitchen? The Italian Plumber? What do you mean the French Laundry? What kind of name is that? Why would anyone want to eat there? Has anyone ever eaten in these joints and why? All right, let's open the show up to gourmands. Tell me what it is you're looking for in these fancy restaurants. And we'll see if we can understand those of you with exceptionally fine palates, what food is for you that it isn't for the rest of us beasts who don't know food. Only you know food. Only you know wine. Only you know food. What do you want to talk about? I'm here holding down the fort. I know what's coming in the world, and I know that when it happens, you're going to need me. So I'm sitting here, basically. I'm filibustering my own show. Yeah, I'll do news once in a while, but there's really nothing to talk about. What can I do about it? At the end of the day, nothing. The government's out of control. We have government anarchy run by a small band of people, and now there's another band, a small band, that want to steal it from them so they can rape the treasury even more completely. That's all. So I'm sitting here watching the whole thing. Here, we got one taker on the Michelin Guide. KNEW, Tony, go ahead, please. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I just want to make a comment. That one restaurant that got that 3-star rating, if you bring your own bottle of wine in there, they charge you $50 for corkage.
Well, if it's a $500 bottle retail, that's a good deal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you bring your own. But the thing is, the dinner itself there is unbelievably expensive. And plus, try to get a reservation there. They put you...
You'll never get in. But, Tony, you've been to the French Laundry. What do they have that, let's say, a reasonably good restaurant doesn't have?
You know what? I just think it's absolutely ridiculous if you have to wait 2 to 3 months to get a reservation.
Well, it's called herd mentality. And the very people who think that they're different than everyone else are, in fact, a herd unto themselves. What are they experiencing in that restaurant that they couldn't experience in any one of a dozen other restaurants in San Francisco or in New York or in Dallas, for example?
I've talked to people that have gone there, and it is expensive, but a couple people told me that was the best meal they ever had.
All right, but you weren't there, so what are you calling for? That's all. Maybe they could tell me. I'm never going to go there. What, I don't have the money to go? What's the point? I can eat at any restaurant in the city tonight. Instead, I ate in a greasy Chinese spoon, a Chinese greasy spoon, because Tuesday is curry day. I swore off it. I said I'd never go there again, but it was a long time, and it's like a stable, you know, like I do it on Tuesdays. I get the curry. And it's like I don't even eat the food in there. I just kind of like, you know, read the newspaper and shovel it in with chopsticks. Get indigestion every time. It burns out a lot of the poison. I made a mistake yesterday. I drank something that had been sitting on the kitchen sink for 4 days. You ever eat you know that ad? You know what's getting to me? I could have had a V8. It's actually working on me. So I got V8s, like little cans of them, instead of drinking a Diet Coke. Every once in a while, I'll take a V8, and I feel like I've done something good for God. I feel more religious. And I said, wow, man, I'm really a good guy today. So the other day, I was in the house, this house I have where I keep my boat on Saturday. So I had a V8, and I left the half of it over and left it in the sink and forgot about it. Now, on Sunday, yesterday I went there for something and pulled out a fresh V8 and drank about a half of it. I felt like, you know, I did a religious thing. Put it down. I got distracted with the dog or something, and I went to pick up the one I thought I had just opened. Instead, I reached in the sink, and I drank the one that had been sitting in the sink for 3 days, unrefrigerated. Now, this is vegetable juice unrefrigerated, right down the gullet, a half a can. Right away, every alarm bell goes off in my head. I mean, I'm a trained nutritionist, biologist. I said, do you have any idea what bacteria you just put into your stomach? This is crazy. You have a choice now. I said, you could really get really paranoid here and make yourself puke, or you can take a lot of vitamin, which I did. I took a ton, about 4 grams of vitamin C, and that was the end of it. And last night, I ate some Indian food. Oh, my God, it was hot. But just as an insurance policy, I went for the extra hot spices in there. How do those Indians take it? All those spices, my God. You know, spices make sense in the hot countries where there was no refrigeration, that kind of spice level, where there's poor refrigeration, food's contaminated. That's where spices were developed, were in the hot countries. But when you have a refrigeration and good food quality, you don't really need spices at that, level. Who needs it? It's something else. It's a matter of culture. Wonder where, I'm going to have to look retrospectively at seeing their rate of stomach cancer from all those spices and what they get. What do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? Something depressing, I hope? Josh in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. It's an honor to talk to you.
All right, great.
I'd like to talk about postpartum depression, actually. My wife, we just had our baby. I talked to you a couple weeks ago, but we got disconnected. The doctor was giving her Vicodin and Xanax because she has anxiety.
The doctor should be taken out and put into prison for 30 years. Your doctor's a drug pusher.
So that's what I was trying to explain to my wife.
He put your wife on Vicodin and Xanax for postpartum depression. They should take the doctor out and hang him. He should be tried for murder. A drug peddler in downtown Houston is less to be feared than your doctor.
What I'm trying to figure out is what it can do to my child. Because my baby was just born, and he actually...
And is your wife nursing?
Yes, she is, and she's still...
Oh, well, tell that to your whacked-up, drug-addicted doctor. Maybe the schmuck doesn't realize that what your wife ingests through the rotten drugs he's prescribing is going to go through the mother's milk into the baby. Maybe the schmuck doesn't even know that. Does he understand nursing milk comes from the mother, not from Elsie the cow?
Exactly what I was, but he said
that son of a gun, he should be arrested. See, the doctors today are all losers, 99% of them, except my doctors. No, it's sickening. Do you have a copy of my book, Healing Children Naturally, where I cover this and the treatment for do you know that postpartum depression is a very normal state, particularly in America, because of the deficiency of the diets here? Do you know that?
Right.
You see, postpartum depression is not very well established in the third world because the whole concept of pregnancy in other parts of the world, particularly so-called primitive parts of the world, is seen differently than it is in America. In America, pregnancy is treated as an illness that the mother has to be cured of. The baby is seen as a growth that needs to be removed from her body because our medical system is upside down and crazy. And so the mother has given up all of her nutrients with a deficient diet for 9 months to an infant, the growing fetus in an infant. So now she's depleted of all of the essential nutrients. So if you know which nutrients to add back, within a few days, the woman's depression will go away. Do you know that?
No, I did not.
Well, of course you didn't, because your drug dealer, I mean your doctor, told you to put her on Xanax and Vicodin. He should be arrested, that whack job. Let me send you a copy of Healing Children Naturally. Maybe we can save one woman from the vicious medical establishment out there. Take his name and send it to us. We'll send it to him. See, these things bother me a lot. They really do. Really bother me. John, in New York on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. How are you today?
Next case. Go ahead.
Hello?
No, what's on your mind? What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to talk to you. Every time you bring the Italian woman up wearing the black, it reminds me of how I grew up. My grandmother wore black. When our husband died, when my grandfather died, and It just reminds me. I like how you reminisce about your father all the time. It kind of reminds me of everything.
Oh, you mean that they wore – I didn't even know it. You mean they wore black after their husbands died as for the rest of their lives? That was the, that's what they were doing?
Yeah, that the reason why they wear black is because their husband died. It's a tradition in the old country. And I'm a first
generation. Oh, I really didn't know that. Honest to God, that's an amazing tradition. Yeah. Here they put on – in America, they put on a miniskirt and look for a man 30 years younger now. They don't wear black. They put on pink.
In fact, when my father died, one of the things he kind of left his old country in a rowboat just to provide a better life for us. And what he did was he told my mother, we're in America now, he passed away about 3 years ago, and he told her this. I don't want you wearing black. I want to try to customize you to the American way, which is, being the...
Well, but I'm saying that was 20 years ago when I was in San Francisco in the streets, first got here in the 70s. I still saw these old women. They all died off. The old Italians have basically died off that generation, the ones who wore black. Thank you for the call. My father died, God rest his soul, 1970. My mother died only 4 years ago. She was 88. She never went out on a date after the death of my father. Never. Now, don't think they were like, lovey-dovey. But that was the way they were. I mean, she just didn't look for another husband 2 days later. She didn't wear black. She enjoyed her life. She liked to go to family events, dinner, this and that, but... She didn't walk around in black. No, nothing like that at all. But, for the years they were together, they fought like everybody else. But after he died, she never looked for a date. What'd she need a date for? What did she need another husband? Another guy to clean his underwear for? What does she need him for? I'll be right back. I don't understand how doctors can tell a mother to take Vicodin and Xanax when she's nursing a baby. Even aspirin and sedatives. Aspirin itself is not given to a nursing mother because it passes right through the mother's milk. You wouldn't use artificially sweetened foods. You wouldn't use artificial sweeteners if you're nursing. You know that through common sense because nutrients are not the only substances that are passed on to the baby through the milk. So a reasonable mother would watch out what she's eating. But a doctor then puts her on Vicodin and says, there, dear, take this. Take some Xanax because you're feeling the blues after giving birth. How about the nutrients the mother just gave to the baby? The nutrients, the calcium, the iodine that she's deficient in, the B vitamins in particular. I don't want to get into a nutrition show. They're boring, so I don't do one. But, I mean, it's unbelievable, the ignorance out there. Everything that took years, 30 years of knowledge that was built up has been destroyed in about 10 years. Everything that people worked for before me from 1930 through 1965, 70, that I picked it up around 1970 and worked in this field for 20 years or more, writing books and researching, and it was really still going strong until around the 90s, and something happened where the medical establishment has destroyed almost all knowledge, all commonsensical knowledge about diet and nutrition. They've turned everybody into a pill taker, a drug taker. Everybody is now addicted to medication. And this is a national epidemic of prescription drug addiction. And it's a nation that is absolutely ripe for total fascism. And it's a soft fascism that we have already, but it's going to be a hard fascism very soon. The people are like victimized by their own weaknesses. KNEW, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, one word for the French Laundry. Overrated.
You were there?
Yep. I had to take...
What could they possibly have that a reasonably good restaurant elsewhere wouldn't have? What did they have that was different?
Nothing. Reputation only.
So in other words, people are eating the stars. That's all they're eating.
Yeah. And, the other thing is it's prefixed. It's $2.75 a person before you
order
the
wine. I see. Oh, it must be really special then for $275. I guarantee you that salad is better than any salad you ever ate, right?
You get the big plate with the little portion and they lock
it. Oh, then it must really be worth the money. And what about attitude? You get a little attitude from the waiters?
No, they're
actually.
They're laid back. Yeah, up there, they're laid back. They don't have the French attitude, thank God. You can't blame them. But look, it's a con like anything else, in my opinion. And there's a sucker born every minute at all economic levels. You know that. Whether it's the poor wanting to put money into the lottery or go into the U.S. Marines or the French laundry.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I don't know how I got into this the Michelin stars. I see a Michelin star, I go down the street. I know it's for a schmuck who wants to talk about it. It's unbelievable. Well, what's the difference if it has a star? It's like a reviewer tells you a movie's great. You know he probably was paid off to write it. Ranker just came out on XM and Sirius. What a bomb. Wow, look at that. Low numbers. I really smear them. I wipe the ground up with the number of listeners they haven't. Did you know the satellite radio audience is much lower than AM talk? I bet you don't even know this. This just came out. I have the numbers right in front of me. Spring 2007 National Satellite Audience Estimates. Howard Stern, CUME, 1.2 million. And we've been hyped that it's 5 million, 7 million. It was a bomb, a bust. It was a sales hype to sell radios. Never went anywhere. That's unbelievable. Look at the audiences for these things. Top 10 XM talk. The virus, 216,000 cume. I have more than that in 15 minutes than they have the whole week. This is unbelievable how small it really is. Air America Radio on XM. A total audience of 109,600. This is amazingly telling. Wow. Whew. I'm not on it either, though. I took my show off the satellite channels years ago. I didn't want it on. Why should they have it? See, I figure, like, if you have to listen to me on AM, you will. Why give it to them? It was a good idea when it came along, but, forget about it, okay? I don't want to talk about ratings. Look at these fires. What do you do if you get 500,000 people evacuated? That's like a bomb hit them. You know, look, I got to tell you something. It's a monumental tragedy. There are many causes of it, all natural. One of the main reasons this is so out of control is because the environmental wackos and the people in the area themselves refuse to permit the forest rangers to burn the brush in controlled burns and small fires because they didn't want the smoke. But that's how nature has cleansed herself through the ages. Which is that there'd be small forest fires that burnt away the underbrush. And that would reduce the chance of a fire like this, a monumental fire like this. But when you don't burn out the underbrush, when a fire starts, now it's got all this tinder. Do you understand? But you go tell that to the residents. Oh, no, I don't want the smoke. I don't want the ash in my pool. No controlled fires. So now they have no pool and no house. But go tell that to anybody in the media. Go ahead. Go tell them that. They'll say you're attacking the people whose houses are burning. I'm not. I'm just telling you what's going on. Some will say it's terrorism. I don't know. I have no idea whether our good friends from the Middle East threw a little match there to start it. Well, why not? Why wouldn't they? Maybe they went a little camping, a little 15th century camping, and they did a little prayer on their hands and knees and threw a little jerry can with gas on the way out of the woods. Well, who's to stop them? I mean, if a fire ranger saw five guys in Middle Eastern garb coming out of the woods with gas cans in the truck, and he reported them, he'd probably get fired. You know what I'm saying? Oh, but if he saw a blonde with blue eyes shooting a spotted owl's droppings, then the guy with the wire, they'd get a helicopter for him. What do you want to talk about here? I don't know. Okay, Rich on WOR, go ahead, please. You want to talk about food? Please do.
Yeah, hi, Mike. My wife loves to listen to you, and she got me to listen to you, and I do enjoy your conversation. I'm in Long Island, New York, and we did take a trip to the Napa Valley, and we were around the corner from the French Laundry, and we met a couple there that made reservations. They were from Europe, and they waited, I think it was a year before they got there. And we also have friends around the corner that made reservations and did go there, and it's a three-hour meal. In my personal opinion, I could never sit for 3 hours. in a place that's not air-conditioned. We stopped by and stepped in and said, we'd like to look around. And I said, why is it so warm in here? Well, we're not air-conditioned. And Napa Valley is basically a wine valley.
It's an inferno in the summer. You can suffocate.
You could suffocate, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Go tell that to the schmucks who live in Sonoma and Napa. Oh, no, we don't need air conditioning. That's not natural. But the grapes, how are they raised? Naturally or with a little pesticide and fertilizer? Look, it's all hype. A lot of people out here are very confused. They're politically mixed up and they're mentally mixed up. Look, good luck to them. If they want to pay that kind of money for a meal and sit for 3 hours, they guess they got nothing better to do and then go back to Brooklyn and tell everyone they ate in the French Laundry. As I say, there's a sucker born every minute.
Well, the truth is, if you can't get in, you want in. And that's basically it. Somebody somehow...
Well, there's a rule. There's a rule in nature, which is we pursue that which retreats from us. Whether it's a man running after a woman who says no, or a restaurant who says you can't get in for a year. Then suddenly the guy is dying to get in there.
Exactly.
I go the exact opposite. If there's a line, I keep walking. Anyway, my whole life, whether it was a movie or a restaurant, I will not stand in line for anything. I will not do it. I don't have the patience for it. It makes me feel stupid to stand in line.
Guy Keller.
Anyway, that's my personal opinion. I'm counterintuitive, or whatever they call it. I guess I just don't like to stand in a line. Is what it comes down to. Gibson blaming fires on Bush? No, I don't believe this. Was he gone back on the bender again? Mel Gibson is blaming the fires on George Bush? Has someone checked? Is the guy back on the gas, on the juice again? I don't believe it. Oh, my God. That's amazing to me. You got any music today? Anybody got some rock and roll for me? I'm in one of these weird moods. Kurdish site shows photos of captured Turkish soldiers. Wild elephants get drunk and die on power lines. Oh, it's depressing. Well, dozens of wildfires continue to burn. What are they all giving speeches for? They can't do anything to stop it. Schwarzenegger, listen to clip 7. Come on.
It's a tragic time for California.
Yes.
The devastating fires have killed so far one person. They've injured four firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
Maria and I want to join all Californians to send
But what are you going
to
do about it? Nothing. All right, let's turn it off. All right, another useless politician. All he did was an excuse to put on a tie. That's all. What are we talking about here on the show? Let's go to another complete other part of the country here. Is there nothing? There's nothing in the news, truthfully. We're just waiting for a bomb to go off. We're all waiting for a dirty bomb, something out of a little contamination. It's going to come like a heart attack. What's going to happen is, the world is going to get hit with something. It'll be like a heart attack that hits this country. And then maybe the people will wake up or they'll die, one or the other. But that's what it's going to have, a heart attack. This country's going to have a heart attack eventually. We're letting in tens of thousands of throwbacks wearing burkas, full-body burkas. Their children are wearing full-body garb. What in the world? What sane nation brings people in from the 15th century and expects them to get along in a liberal society? Tell me how that works. Tell me what the thinking is. Either you wind up putting on a burqa or they wind up killing you. So it doesn't work the other way. She doesn't throw the burqa away for a miniskirt. Let me start with that. She doesn't take the burqa and burn it and put on a miniskirt and put on lipstick and rouge. She kills you or you put on a burqa. But go tell that to Bush. They have nobody advising them. Nobody. It's like a train out of control with no one at the engineer in the engineer's booth. A train. No one's in the engineer. Nobody's in there. The train's running. Ooh, ooh. Bring them in. Bring them in. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Bring in more Muslims. More Mexicans. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Where does it stop? I don't care. Keep blowing your horn, George. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And the train keeps running. No one's there. There's no engineer in the train. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Just bring more in. Feel good. That's why I tell you it's getting very difficult to do talk radio, because I can tell you this is a disaster that's growing like a storm. I can feel it like a hurricane building up energy. You know, I feel like it's a hurricane building up an energy here in this country, a social hurricane. And the politicians are making it worse by the second, is how I see it. It's one man's opinion. That's why I'd rather talk about wine or food or vitamins or dogs death, dying, parents, tradition, antiques, art, whatever you want to talk about, I can do it. Remember that I have the background, I have the gears, I have the knowledge, I have the experience, I have the education. And if you want to have a real conversation about these topics, I will try to lead it, and perhaps you can make it better than I can, which is what talk radio is about. You understand that? KNEW, San Francisco. Rich, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike.
Yes, hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
What do you mean, hey, Mike? Look, Rich, let's start again. I said you're on the air, and I leaned back in the chair. You're starting with, hey, Mike, I got to lean forward and say something. Don't make me lean forward. I was having a relaxing minute. What's on your mind?
I was having trouble with my phone. I want to digress to last week where you're talking about Marin County attitude.
Yeah, wonderful attitudes here. The druggies of Marin.
Biking on Mount Tamalpais, you know, and I'm courteous, and I was doing under the speed limit, which is 15, and I have a bell, right, so I don't spook anybody, you know. So I'm coming down this trail, and I see this woman with her dog with one of those leashes that goes out about 20 feet.
Oh, yeah, I'm a bicyclist. They let it run right in front of your bicycle, and they stare at you hoping you'll fall off your bicycle.
Right, so I ring.
What I do is I aim at the dog. I let them see the fire in my eyes. I look right at the woman and at the dog, and I say, you know what, lady, in my eyes, I'm going to kill your dog if you don't pull it in. And they usually wait for the last second to pull a dog in. They're the worst scum on the planet here. I've never seen anything like it. They're psychopaths.
Yes. So
run the dog over next time with your bicycle. That'll teach her a lesson. So what'd she do? She wanted to have you fall off the seat?
No, let me finish the story. I rang the bell to let her know I was coming to be courteous. And she turned around and saw me and ignored me and did not reel her dog in. So
of course not. All right, so what happened? I'm asking you, what happened?
Oh, well, after the third bell ring, I ran over the leash, wrapped it up in my tire, and dragged the dog out into the middle of the fire road.
Oh, great. Good scene. And what happened? She screamed, my baby?
No, she said, that's why mountain bikers should not be allowed on Mount Tamalpais.
All right, so she was fighting with you, hoping she could scare you into stopping and skidding and maybe even hurting yourself. And you taught her a lesson. Good. Good. Next time, maybe you can drag her with the chain.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Maybe she'll get tangled up in the chain. Look, I had a friend call me on Sunday. I'm not going to tell you his name. He had a very similar incident with a dog. And I'm a dog person. But they're out of control here in Marin County. They're fighting with everybody, particularly bicyclists. They want everyone to look at their dog crap. What they're doing is using the dogs to defecate on the society. That's how they are, these people. They're sick in the head. He was in a mall with his young daughter, my friend, just minding his business. So everyone had their dogs in a leash except one doll. Let's put it to you this way. She looked like Barbara Boxer with a big hat. You get the picture, the type? And her dog was off a leash running around sniffing everyone in the crotch. In other words, menacing everyone. So the dog came over toward my friend's daughter, and he's a very, very protective father. And he got between the dog and his daughter, and he said to the woman, hey, lady, if your dog comes near my daughter and bites her, I will kill your dog, and you're going to have a problem on your hands. The woman started cursing him, screaming at him, went to his daughter and said, your father's an SOB, your father's... This is the kind of women you have to put up with in Marin County. Bitter, nasty Democrats. They all vote socialist platform top to bottom. This is what you live with here. In the Democrat Marin County, this is the kind of women you run into. That's all. But I don't do that with my dog. I keep him on a leash if I see a person. Firstly, he wouldn't run at anybody. He's not trained to do that. But these people use their dogs as weapons. Don't you love they sniff you in the crotch? You're walking on a trail. They got a mastiff that comes running at you, slobbering, puts his head right in your crotch. You stand there frozen. Oh, don't worry, says the lesbian with a girlfriend. He's friendly. He's friendly. How many times has that happened to you? It's all an attempt to control you with their dogs. It's illegal. There's a code that says you have to have the dog on a leash. So you're entitled, actually, to shoot that dog if you feel threatened. And it's going to come down to it. I mean, well, you want a mastiff sniffing your crotch and maybe he gets hungry for the second? You know? KNEW, Dale, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike, I got a question about the dog who's got lymphoma.
It's on lymphoma. I am sorry. Sacramento, Bobby, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Need a place to eat in Times Square. Got a little girlfriend from upstate taking me to dinner in Times Square next week?
I don't know. I haven't been in New York in so long. Try Hubert's Flea Circus. See if you can get a hot dog there. Or they're not in the business. I'm joking. Why don't you go down in the subway and get yourself a hot dog? There you go. What do I know about Times Square? I haven't been there forever. Call Rudy Giuliani. Yesterday he was a Yankee fan. Today he's a Red Sox fan. Maybe he'll tell you where to eat. Then you could ask him what his favorite restaurant is. He'll tell you one day it's this one, the next day it's that one. Ask him where he stands on abortion. He's not for it, but he's against it. But before he was against it, he was for it. And now that he's for it, he was definitely against it yesterday. And where do you stand on the Iraq war? Definitely I stand here, but not there. And when I was standing there, I was definitely going to not stand here. But I'll tell you this. When I'm president, I will go to the Waldorf Astoria and address at least once a month and put on a good laugh for all of you. And I am absolutely convinced that you'll vote for me because you're a bigger schmuck than I am. Okay, my friends, what else do you want to talk about? Isn't there some substantive topic we can have a conversation, or do you want me to answer anything? California's burning because of the environmental schmucks. That's why we have the mammoth fire. Have you read that anywhere or seen that anywhere? That you can blame this squarely on the environmentalists who would not permit controlled burns? I'll bet you haven't read that anywhere. Are you aware also that these fires are natural? The small fires are natural this time of year in Southern California. It is a semi-arid climate. It is a semi-desert, by the way, just beyond the area where the fires are. And out of that desert come the winds, the desert winds. And they're powerful winds this time of year. You get into a pressure system where the winds blow. And, boy, you get a triple going on like this. It's like the perfect storm. Now, I'm not saying that the fires could have been totally prevented, but the fire on this scale could have been prevented had they permitted controlled burns. The same thing is going on across America, where environmental stupidity is a breeding ground for forest fires. They will not permit controlled burns. Nature has always burned small fires in forests to kill the underbrush. I mean, nature didn't say, let's kill the underbrush, but that's a natural cycle. Not like nature said, let's kill the underbrush, I'll have a fire. Nature didn't talk to itself. But the cycle of nature consists of various phenomena, one of which is small fires within forests to burn out the underbrush. And that prevents the big fire. But go tell that to Arnold Strudelnager. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Here's a story about cancer in China. It's one of the leading causes of death. The country is the most polluted on the earth. Here are some people in a little village. They're dying of agonizing deaths at young ages. And they're blaming it on the brown and rust-colored waters from the river that runs through their village, which farmers use to irrigate their crops. Now, what is this river? The river is polluted because the iron ore mine, about 35 miles away, is releasing the toxins from the iron ore process of making iron ore. And heavy metals like arsenic and cadmium wind up in the water, okay? And then they use this water to irrigate their crops, and you buy their crops. Let's talk about America right now. You are buying crops from China. It's affecting your food supply. The amount of food imported from this polluted nation of China has grown in the past decade to $4.1 billion worth of seafood and agricultural products in 2006. In 1995, when Clinton was in office, it was $800 million. And so now if you're eating fish or shrimp from China, you're probably getting antibiotics and carcinogens in the shrimp and the fish. But that's okay. The important thing is that the global traders make money. And the more important thing is that George Bush's theory on free trade be maintained at all costs, even at the cost of bringing in contaminated food. The important thing is the bottom line. Don't you understand that? It's not whether or not you get cancer. You're irrelevant in the New World Order. What's relevant is the bottom line for the major food corporations and for the governments involved in importing the foods and buying each other back and forth with various trade. Trade is more important than health. Don't you understand that? What kind of thinking do you have? It's okay that you die of cancer, because you're sacrificing yourself for the gross national product, which is so important, it's so American, to die for the GNP. It is so good for the machine, the Demican machine, that you die for the GNP. Don't you get it?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and the Holocaust raging through Southern California reminds us how pitifully small we are as humans and that nature has its own rhythms. And what can you say about this? I mean, you can say the houses shouldn't have been there. I mean, where are you going to go with that one? But the houses really shouldn't have been there. You know, right now we have a rash of bear break-ins, for example, in the Lake Tahoe Basin because there's been a long drought. There were no berries. These bears need pounds of berries to eat before going into hibernation come in the winter. They're starving to death. They're breaking into houses. Should you say that the houses shouldn't have been built in the Lake Tahoe Basin? Sure, but that's not going to really have any effect. And should the houses not have been built in the fire belt here in Southern California? Sure, but it's not going to have any effect. A million people have been forced to flee their homes in Southern California. This is beyond a wartime situation, by the way. I mean, if a dirty bomb, God forbid, had gone off, I don't think the effects could be as devastating. I don't know what this is going to do to the economy of California, to the economy of the nation. I don't know. I can't even yet just calculate if anyone's even talked about it, what it's going to do to the housing market in California. But let's talk about illegal immigration. What is this going to do with the illegal immigration problem? Is it going to affect it in some way? Were they responsible in part for starting fires? Many of them live in the woods on the way to their migration routes. And some of these fires have been traced to illegal immigrants in the past. Are we allowed to ask the question? Of course not. Bring in more of them. So there are many, many discussions to be had about these raging California wildfires, including the stupidity of the environmental wackos who would not permit controlled burns of the underbrush, because had these controlled burns been permitted, everyone who studies these things will tell you that the size of the fire would have been greatly smaller than it is today. Let's see the other headlines. Bush touts European missile defense plan. Thompson proposes immigration crackdown. White House edits CDC climate testimony. Wisconsin man finds 3.92-carat white diamond. Rockies World Series tickets sell out, and there's America right now. There is America right now. I was also talking about Michelin stars and the ratings, and they've just come out with them, and how people are going to rush to various restaurants because of the number of stars, and how I've never, ever, ever been influenced by a reviewer, nor by Michelin stars. We can talk about that. I was talking about antiques. We can talk about that and why if I look at an antique piece of furniture, let's say 1810, I'm picking a number out of the air, some burled walnut desk. I don't just look at the piece of furniture. What I see is different than what you may see. I see a piece of furniture that survived revolutions, earthquakes, upheavals, fires, war, theft, and here it is sitting here. And so that's what you're buying when you're buying a real antique. I'm not talking about antiquities of priceless value. I'm not talking about Greek or Roman antiquities or Assyrian treasures. I'm talking about reasonably within the realm of, let's say, the average middle-class person who wants some rare pieces in the $10,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 range. You can still buy things that are amazing in that range, you know. WOR, New York, Gil, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, a few quick points, if I may. First, a caveat. When you talk about antique furniture, please keep in mind that much of the furniture are either knockoffs or they're crafted by journeymen who were under apprentices to the master cabinet maker. And you can tell that usually by the doors being ajar, misaligned, and things of that sort, and poor joining. Please keep in mind.
Hold on, no. You're an expert on this. I am not. I hear what you're saying. Absolutely. So if you're looking for, let's say, the original, it's unaffordable, a museum quality. It's unaffordable, right? So are you then saying that the pieces that we're seeing in antique stores, no matter how good they look, are basically not worth the money?
All of these antiques, quote-unquote, that are excellent quality are either in multi-millionaire mansions, or they're in the palaces of Europe and other places, or they're in the museums. They've all been bought up for the most part. These are either knockoffs that turned out in the back room, or they are the poor students of the master cabinet maker, and you can tell them by the poor quality. You close the door. Many people are naive to think that, look, this is a great antique. Look, the doors don't open up. The doors are misaligned. This it's nonsense. It's the same
Gil, thing. Gil, I'm taking your word for it. Let me ask you something. So I stopped in the store today, and I saw an English or American mahogany decanter chest. You know what I'm talking about, which contains six large and six small gilded decanters and various glasses. And they say circa 1810, and they want $3,250 for it. How do I know what it is?
The only way you can know is if you get an expert in antiques to accompany you, or you bring a piece to them for an evaluation. And please keep in mind that in New York City, in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Colving, who is then the chief curator of the museum, has hundreds and hundreds of fine paintings which turned out to be fraud, which are in their cellars, in their basements.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, look, I know there's a lot of chicanery in the antique world. I knew it from the level that my dad was in, even. I saw good stuff and bad stuff. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't buy some of these things if they're priced right. I mean, well, let's start with paintings. We understand the finest paintings are in museums and are also in mansions. It doesn't mean there aren't some very good journeyman paintings out there. That's certainly a truth.
That's true. Please keep in mind that Raphael used to have his students do the paintings, and he would put the final stroke, and he would put his name to it.
Well, for example, when I was a boy, I told you my father had a small antique store. Most of it was not very valuable. It was 19th century French bronzes. But he had a very good eye, and sometimes very good things would come through. And I collected small pieces over the years. So I have a set of landscapes that I love, and I've treasured ever since I've been 11 years old when he sold them to me. He wouldn't give them to me. He made me pay for good reason. He wanted to teach me the value. What did I pay, $35 40 years ago? But I'll never forget. Okay, so On the Nid and a Bit of Ullswater. And they are two landscapes from the Welsh country, the Wales countryside. Now, I know they're worth about $3,000 a piece if you go onto the art sites. But the value to me, these are perfectly executed landscapes. And believe me, I know the difference. I can see the proportions. They're perfect. It's like looking through a window at a pastoral scene. That's how good they are. I know their value is not much higher than $3,000. It doesn't diminish the beauty of the painting, though. So are you yourself an antique dealer or a buyer?
No, no. I'm trained as a physician, and this is through readings and meeting people from all over the world and just discussing. I like to engage people in conversations.
No, I agree. This is a fascinating topic. I think it's a beautiful topic. But I want to make one other point, Gil. When I go into a store and I see some of this fine furniture, albeit not the highest level, some of it's really good, though, I do see if it's authentic and not made yesterday in Russia, for example, or by somebody who can copy, I do see the hundreds of years of preservation that went into bringing that piece of furniture into that store. You know, it gives me a sense of continuity with the past. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. I'll give you another example, then I'll get off this topic because most people don't want to talk about any of this. It's so out of the ken of Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly. They couldn't talk about this. They, you know, and if I do it, it's a risk. It's a risk for an audience in talk radio. I understand that. You want to hear Democrats, like a wrestling match, Republican, oh, oof, bam, bim, boom. Giuliani, Hillary, no good, good. Bush, no good, good, good. That's all you want to hear in talk. I can't do it. You'll have to tune in one of the wrestlers, one of the mind wrestlers, if you want that. So to get back to years ago in the 1970s, in the early 70s, I collected rare botanical books, hand-tinted books with hand-tinted plates. And they were expensive then, but I knew that, well, what happened was I have a few of these scents. You can never find, after 1974, after the oil embargo, when the prices went through the roof, all of those rare books were bought up by Arab folks, mainly in Saudi Arabia. They cleaned out almost all the rare book dealers of these zoological and botanical books at that time. Well, I hear today you can't even find them at all. And I have a few of them stored away in a beautiful place, but I didn't buy them to make money. Remember, I had at the time I was a plant collector. I wasn't buying factories. I was collecting botanicals in the South Pacific. And so, and I was writing books on the subject. So I would sit for hours and look at these hand-tinted pictures of plants. It was as though I was looking at into another universe. And, you know, I got to tell you, it took my mind off the temporal worries of the time, and there were plenty of them in the 70s, just as there are today. And you have to find a way to get your mind off the terrible things that are going on in the world today. And if it's a collection, or if it's art, or if it's reading, obviously the human being still has to be able to dream and reflect. And that is so lost in America today, dreams and reflection. I even think memories are being destroyed in America today by drugs, both legal and illegal. So, you know, you talk about how do you sustain yourself in a crazy world, memories, dreams, and reflections. Well, the memories are being stolen from us by historical revisionism and drugging. Dreams are being deemed illegal because they're not marketable. And reflections are considered communistic because they're too introspective in a society that demands perfection and performance. I think that is well said, and I think I'm going to reward myself right now with a short break. Then we're going to come back to another wonderful segment here on The Savage Nation, go to the headlines, national, international, politics, science, entertainment, whatever we talk about. The only subject I will never talk about ever is sports. Never. You will never hear me talk about whether A is on the base or B is on the base or C is on a – I don't care about sports. I hate them. They're idiotic. All sports are too slow for me. I feel like I'm going to fall asleep looking at a game. So there it is. I'll be back.
Savage.
Recently, the Democrats tried to shove socialized medicine down the throats of the American people with the SHIP bill. But one brave senator, Dr. Tom Coburn, tried to at least make them give up their pork before they try to override the president's veto. Senator Coburn, you're a practicing physician concerned about America's children. You authored an amendment to the SHIP proposal called the Children's Health Care First Act. What's the purpose of this amendment?
Well, the purpose is to let Americans show what our real priority is. It's either the kids' health care and a system that will support children who actually need health care and don't have the means to get it, or our earmarks. And the amendment eliminated all the earmarks in the bill and said that that money must go for children's health care, and that money can't be spent on anything other than that till we certify that the kids under 18 are covered.
How many earmarks did they shove into this bill? How much did they cost us?
It's about $400 million, enough to insure about 170,000 kids.
What are the nature and cost of some of these pork barrel earmarks?
Well, if there's $72 million for Iowa. Some of that is good, some of it's bad. One is $42 million to the International Labor Organization of the UN, a non-authorized project. There's enough earmarks in the bill to cover all the uninsured kids in Iowa. Be about 39 or 40,000 kids.
Unfortunately, I see your amendment was defeated, tabled by a 68-26 vote. What message is this sending from Washington to the rest of America?
It says that the politicians' priority is their own reelection and their own pork, and not the real issue about covering our kids. You know, the SCHIP bill that we just was vetoed by the president spent $4,000 to buy $2,300 worth of insurance, really a bad deal for Americans. And what this amendment would have done is insure 175,000 of those kids at $2,300 a piece, which is exactly what it costs on average to buy insurance for a child. the defeat of this amendment says the culture of the Senate hadn't changed yet to meet what every American family has to do every day, which is live within their means and make choices about priorities. And what the Senate refused to do was to make a choice on priorities. They put your kids last and their political careers first.
If these senators are so determined to get health care for children, why won't they give up their pork barrel spending, meaning their pork?
Because they'd rather play the game. They're not determined to get health care for children. That's what the whole vote was all about. 60-some of them didn't want that. Now, it's the same issue all the way around. What is the priorities of the members of the Senate? I think Senator Harkin said that this bill demonstrated to the American people what our priorities are. And so by rejecting this amendment, the priorities are is $400 million worth of pork.
Would these senators be willing to stop illegal immigration for the sake of children's health care, or do they want it all?
They want the power that comes with earmarking and directed spending into their own states so they can use that as a recognition of bringing home the bacon. So they're looking at the short-term political benefits for them or their state, at the same time ignoring the long-term benefits for our country by insuring our kids. You know, if you look at all the states as a group now have a $48 billion surplus. We're running a $300 billion deficit. So why should we have a bunch of earmarks in for states when the states, if that was a priority in the state should be doing them?
Isn't this socialized medicine? Isn't this insanity?
That is the case with the S-CHIP bill that they offered. They want the government to run it rather than you to have the freedom and the ability to decide what you want and what care you want for you and your family. There's an author who had a famous quote. He said, it's P.J. O'Rourke. He said, if you think health care is expensive now, wait till it's free. Well, I think the American people, that's what the debate over the 2008 presidential election is about. Are we going to have a government-run system that controls costs by eliminating your access to care? Or are we going to use what we've had on every other aspect of our economy, which is free markets, allowing competition to lower the cost and improve the quality and improve the access? And we can do that by giving everybody in this country a refundable tax credit that doesn't cost a penny, and everybody's treated the same under the tax code.
Has there been a proposal to ban illegals from this free medical handout?
Well, they continue to cause cost shifting because they're not covered. So we absorb their costs, and then everybody that has insurance or paying cash is paying a higher rate because we're absorbing those costs. So the problem with health care of illegals goes back to the not controlling our borders and not enforcing our law.
This is hard to believe that this is still going on. It can't be going on. But thanks for the update.
Michael, thanks very much for your time. Bye-bye.
Savage.
I recently sat down with Congressman Culberson to discuss our borders. There's a very effective strategy being implemented against illegal immigrants enforced in the Del Rio sector of Texas. I'd like to see this strategy adopted and enforced along the entire border. Congressman, what can you tell us about Operation Streamline?
Law enforcement works, and in the Del Rio sector of the southern border in Texas, they have zero tolerance. They arrest 100% every illegal alien crossing the Rio Grande, and the Del Rio sector is arrested. They are prosecuted under existing law, and their tails are thrown in jail for 6 months under existing federal law, which proves you don't need one new law, you don't need one new dollar, you don't need any new agents. You just enforce the law, and the criminals, the illegal aliens, will go elsewhere, and the local community in Del Rio loves it.
Oh, big surprise there.
Well, Del Rio proves what I finally came to the reluctant conclusion, that the Bush administration, Homeland Security, was never going to secure the border. They were never going to enforce the immigration law. So I've been focused on doing this at the local level along the border. And Del Rio proves that if you just bypass Washington and go straight to the locals, you can secure the border, in fact, seal the border and enforce existing law. Del Rio is doing this zero tolerance, 100% enforcement. They call Operation Streamline purely at local initiative. The local Border Patrol chief, Randy Hill, the Border Patrol chief for the Del Rio sector, deserves our thanks for instituting this with the help of federal judge Alia Ludlam and her two federal magistrates, Judge Dennis Green and Judge Robert Garcia, simply demanded that the prosecutors work whatever, how many hours it took. They were going to get the U.S. Marshals to throw these illegals in jail for 6 months in the local county jail. The U.S. Marshals Service pays federal dollars to the county jail to house these illegal aliens for the mandatory six-month sentence under existing law, which requires a six-month jail sentence for breaking and entering into the United States illegally. That's existing law. You don't need new law. They're thrown in jail for 6 months in the local county jail. The county jail gets some revenue out of the deal. They like it. There's an initial surge in demand for local bed space, but that drops off pretty quickly. As you can imagine, Michael, once you enforce the law, the illegal aliens figured it out in about 30 minutes and began to bypass the Del Rio sector. And as a quick example of how effective zero tolerance in enforcing the law is, before Operation Streamline Zero Tolerance took effect in Del Rio, there were about 7,000 illegal aliens from countries other than Mexico who were arrested in the Del Rio sector, and last month they arrested 20.
You must be joking.
It's important for the country to know that in this bleak landscape of lack of enforcement of immigration laws, the borders seemingly wide open, that there's a few flowers, a ray of hope here in the Del Rio sector, which proves that under existing law, with existing resources, the only change in Del Rio was the Border Patrol had to assign three additional Border Patrol prosecutors to the courtrooms in Del Rio to handle the caseload. That's the only change that's been required. They just use existing resources and existing law. So it's absolutely, utterly false that we need some sort of comprehensive immigration reform or some new law to secure the border. We just need willpower from the Chief Executive Officer of the United States and Homeland Security to enforce existing law. And the all that's being done in Del Rio, frankly, is literally enforcing the existing law, and it's because this is only being done in Del Rio and Yuma, and I want to see it extend up and down the entire border. As a member of the Appropriations Committee, I'm working on an amendment which would insist on and force the Department of Justice to institute zero tolerance. This Operation Streamline, 100% enforcement, 100% prosecution from Brownsville to San Diego, because this is the only sector that's doing it in Del Rio. It's being done a little bit in Yuma. And right next door in Brownsville, I asked a Border Patrol agent last week, I said, okay, tell me the real story in Brownsville. When are you actually arresting illegal aliens? And he told me verbatim, I'm under verbal instructions in the Brownsville sector only to arrest an illegal alien if they knock on the window of my vehicle.
I see. Oh, no.
That's how bad it is in the, that's up and down the border, and it's unfortunately, people need to know that I'm a legislator. I'm a congressman. I can only legislate and enact the law. To enforce the law requires the law enforcement, the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, that's the president. That requires Homeland Security, the Border Patrol, the officers in the field want to do their job. They're handcuffed by the higher-ups. We don't need a single new law. We don't need to do anything other than enforce existing law. And it's also important to remember that in the Del Rio sector, the local community supports zero tolerance. They love it. The Hispanic community loves it in Del Rio because the only way you have safe streets, good schools, a thriving business community is to have law enforcement. And once the law is enforced and you keep the MS-13 gang members, the drug dealers, the criminals, the burglars, the robbers, the rapists, along with the terrorists, thank you very much. The local community loves it. There's strong support from the Hispanic community. And in fact, the congressman from that area, Congressman Ciro Rodriguez, Congressman Henry Cuellar from a little further south on the river are working with me on legislation to, again, bypass the White House, bypass Homeland Security, go right to the local folks on the border. We're going to send $150 million directly to the border sheriffs, locally elected. These are Texas law and order sheriffs from Brownsville to San Diego, all the locally elected sheriffs. We're going to send them $150 million to hire the deputies, buy the machine guns, the vehicles, the body armor that's necessary, and build enough local beds so that they can house when they arrest a burglar, a gang member, a drug dealer, etc., and throw them in jail and find out they're here illegally, the federal government will then pay for housing that federal illegal alien in that county jail. This is what's being done in the Del Rio sector, and as common sense would tell you, demand space for that bed drops off dramatically. The crime rate in Del Rio has plunged through the floor. The demand for bed space has plunged because word gets out pretty quick. You know, criminals aren't the brightest bulbs in the universe, but they do figure out real quick that the law is being enforced, and once we seal that border with uniformed machine gun toting deputy sheriffs from Brownsville to San Diego, and every illegal knows they're going to be thrown in jail for 6 months at least, and if they ever come back, they're a felon and they're gone forever, they won't cross. Problem solved.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. This was really an eye-opener.
Michael, I want to thank you so much for keeping this issue in front of the American people.
It is the Savage Nation. The time is 46 minutes after the hour. Now, earlier in the show, about an hour or so ago or more, I told you that on an international level, there's nobody better than me in analyzing events. Nobody. And I've done it for 15 years, and I've never been wrong. I also told you when I was asked about Putin and why is Putin lining up with Iran, I explained to you who Putin is and how brilliant the man he is as a strategist goes, former head of the KGB. And I said to you, Putin was trying to snooker Iran. They're not really trying to do an alliance with Iran. Many of you didn't know what to make of it. But this came out during the show. It's a brand new development. And it's a positive one, by the way. And that is a developing deal between President Bush and President Vladimir Putin that is to the detriment of Iran. The United States agreed to a concession that we will not build a Europe-based missile shield, okay, in Poland, and the radar site in the Czech Republic, unless an Iranian threat was definitely proved. And what we're going to get for this, is Russia's withdrawal of nuclear aid to Iran and Russia's backing for tough sanctions against the Hitler of our time, the Iranian Hitler. This is a heck of a deal. And if this deal goes through, and I hope it does, this will lead to Russia's tacit acceptance of eventual U.S. military strike against Iran's nuclear and strategic sites. And this is a phenomenal breakthrough. But I told you earlier not to be alarmed that Putin was suddenly lining up Russia and Iran. It was never going to happen. He was trying to control this maniac. And maybe Bush negotiated a very good deal. It's a concession on our part, as I said to you, to not build a missile shield in Poland until an Iranian threat is definitely proven. And what we're going to get for this is Putin's offer of the use of the Moscow's proposed withdrawal of nuclear aid to Iran and backing for tough sanctions. This opens the door to wiping that piece of garbage off the planet and knocking him out once and for all off the chessboard. And it's long overdue. And it's going to happen. The world does not want a third world war. They know he's a wild maniac and he's going to go down. And all of a sudden, by the way, after this came out, the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, has suddenly canceled his trip to Armenia. He thought that he had a good deal going, that man in elevator shoes, that little mocking psychotic thought that he had a little deal going, that he was going to build up an alliance with Armenia now and build a new alliance against Turkey. I told you he's behind the Kurds as well. You haven't read that anywhere. You haven't heard that yet on hardball, softball, middleball, hardball, lowball. But I'm telling you that it's going to come out that he's behind the Kurdish incursion against the Turks. He's the one trying to stir the pot in the Middle East. And he's got to be stopped. He's a threat to the entire stability of the world. I'm surprised he's still walking the planet. The world can't afford this kind of behavior in this day and age. And it's not going to happen. He's not getting nuclear weapons. Thank God Cheney is tough on this. And thank God Bush is tough on this. And you got to give them credit where credit is due. They may be dead wrong on the border. They may be dead wrong on some aspects of world trade. And I've said so. But when it comes to national security right now, there's nobody better than Bush and Cheney. Nobody. And I'm very proud to tell you that this deal, I'm proud to say that the deal is, it looks like it's going to happen. And I'm also frankly, crowing a little bit that I predicted that there was no alliance between Russia and Iran, as many of you feared, that it was all an attempt to entrap Iran. So there it is. I told you I'm the best analyst in the talk radio business, which is not hard to be since, well, we'll let it go with that. We'll just stop right there in the sentence. Let's just say it's not hard to be the smartest one in this area. If you want to talk Democrat, Republican, I'm sure there are some better than me. They know everything about the Democrats and Republicans. Well, I could care less. To me, it's like a baseball game that I'm not interested in. So the U.S. may delay activating planned missile interceptors in Eastern Europe until the Iranian threat is definitely proven. And later in the day, boom, we're going to trade off with Russia. They're going to withdraw nuclear aid to Iran. They're going to back tough sanctions against that psychopathic SOB. And it's going to open up eventual U.S. military strike against the Iran's nuclear and strategic sites. And I can't wait. That's the day America comes together, by the way. America unites the day that happens. The day it'll be like when Reagan struck Gaddafi. Don't you remember that day? What went on in this country after Reagan launched those F-15s at the time? They were F-15s off the aircraft carrier in the Gulf of Tripoli. I remember it like it was yesterday. The day Reagan launched those F-15s and they fired some tomahawks down Gaddafi's chimney right into his tent, Gaddafi suddenly stopped doing the big tough guy act. He suddenly stopped it. And that has to happen with Iran too, only this time they got to take the guy out. All it would take is a cruise missile the next time he gives one of his big displays and talks to a million people, death to Satan and little Satan and big Satan and death to America and bring back the 15th Mahdi, Shmadi. All they're going to do is launch one cruise missile and they're atomized, him and the mullahs, the throwbacks, they're gone. The Iranian people dance in the streets. It's a modern nation. The nation was modernized till this psychopath took it over. He's turned the clock back on Iran. They're starving over there. They're not doing well. They're punishing people for kissing in the streets. They don't want women to drive. A throwback nation. The Iranians are modern people. The Persians deserve better than this invader from Turkey, by the way. So there it is. That's what's happening. No, Putin's not hoodwinking us. Well, I don't know. Maybe he is. Maybe tomorrow we'll come. Maybe he's tricking us now to not building the shield. I don't know. That I can't go for that, to that level. It looks to me like it's a good deal, and I hope it comes down. I really do. 1-800-449-8255 phone number, michaelsavage.com website. This is something to celebrate. I hope this happens. I really do. Not to, because it proves me right. He's very good for the world's the stability of the world. WOR, New York, Mickey, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you're brilliant. Your scenario that you painted a little while ago is just unbelievable. But my mind went a little further, and I said to myself, because I remember that at one time, President Bush looked into Putin's eyes, and he said, he's an honest man. And somebody said that Putin never looked into anybody's eyes. So I got a little, concerned about that.
I understand. Putin is very hard to read. Former head of the KGB, martial artist, been in power a very long time. He's worked the chessboards, the multiple chessboards for a very long period of time. He's not playing chess on one board. He's playing chess on five boards. I understand all of those parameters and how dangerous this could be. But we need him right now. We need him very badly. And if we've got to give him something to get his support, so be it.
I agree with you, Dr. Savage, but you got me a little nervous too. But I always wonder, supposing we do get hit, does anybody know what they have to do in this country if we get hit?
No. What you have to do is make sure your internet pornography doesn't go down and that you can still go to the take yourself out to the ball game. Because you don't want the ratings to go down on television or anything, or you don't want sports to suffer. The important thing is to go to a ball game if a nuclear bomb should go off. The important thing is to continue shopping and going to a ball game. No, how come the country hasn't said they're telling us, expect a dirty bomb or this or that, but they don't tell you what to do. They don't even tell you where to go. They don't even tell you where to go to get a bath to wash the radiation off your body. No, my friend, you're all on your own. That's all. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Aman Ajad, the Hitler of our time, suddenly curtails visit to Armenia without explanation. Gee, I wonder why he suddenly didn't go to Armenia. What happened? The rug was pulled out from under him by Putin. So the little Hitler realized that, the webby was spinning is not such a good web. He got caught in his own web, the little spider. He ran back to his nest in Tehran to talk with the thousand-year-old mullahs there. Well, what should we do next to kill Satan, huh? You'll find out who Satan is soon, you rat bum, you. You'll be in hell with your rotten mullahs where you belong. A religion built on child rape. I never saw anything like this. How can anyone say that if you kill the infidel, you get the 72 virgins? The whole thing's built on child molestation. Well, whatever. What a religion, if that's what it's based upon. My God, don't tell me all religions are the same. This is a psychopathic belief that you get to rape women and the girls in the next world, virgins no less. If you kill people here, you get to rape in the next world. What a religion. Bring in more of them. Yeah, bring in more by the thousand. And Burke is walking around in Washington, D.C. They're reporting. The city's starting to look like Syria, like a throwback Syria from the year 1050 A.D. Okay, what do you want to talk about? Any topic is not fair game. I've told you what I want to talk about. We have 2 big minutes left in this hour, and we can talk about this or the fires, but I've talked about it. You heard my opinion. And I was 100% right. It's funny to me. It's really interesting. At the beginning of the show, I said to you that the Russian leader, Putin, is definitely not making an alliance with Iran. Not that I can tell. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. So I'll eat crow, okay? I'll eat humble pie. But thus far, I said he wasn't. What he was doing was trying to engage the psychopath into thinking he was his big brother. But the psycho from Iran didn't take the bait, don't you remember? He suddenly withdrew, the so-called liberal nuclear negotiator. I don't want to give you all the names because they're too hard to remember. And now it comes out late today, Tuesday, October 23rd, in Prague, when U.S. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates proposes a possible delay in activating the planned missile interceptor base in Poland and the radar site that would go with it in the Czech Republic, until and unless an Iranian threat is definitely proven. So we're reserving our options, right? And what are we going to get for this? What we're going to get for this is Moscow is going to withdraw its nuclear aid to Iran and backing us in tough sanctions against the psycho to squeeze his neck a little bit more till he pops out of his elevator shoes. And then what happens is Russia has tacitly going to, once this deal goes through, it's a tacit acceptance by Russia of our eventuality, which is a definite eventuality, which are U.S. military strikes against Iran's nuclear and strategic sites. Now, the fun will begin then when the fifth column in this country, the so-called liberal press and the Democrats scream that we're starting a war. That's the time to bring out the Sedition Act and put them in prison. You put the Democrat leadership in prison if you need to. You put the journalists in prison if you need to. When they start screaming that we had no right to strike Iran, put them all into a holding cell as far as I'm concerned. I'll be damned if I want to go up in smoke, and I don't want to see this country go up in smoke. I'd rather see them put into a holding tank than this country go up in smoke. But they're going to take the side of Iran. You mark my words. The 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th columns are already marching, undermining this before it even happens. And that's when we got to take our gloves off and we got to help this government round them up by pointing them out and ridiculing them. Savage.